responsibilities. But it won't be forever. If everything goes according to schedule, I'll be joining the firm about this time next year. My parents consider you a valued friend, and I want you to know that I do too. Sincerely, Jillian. September 12, 1973. Dear Jillian, I'm enclosing a picture of me and the kids. I'm the one with the big hair. I love this new style. All I have to do in the morning is wash it and let it dry. Of course, my head looks like a dandelion gone to seed, but that's beside the point. The kids look happy, don't they? Davy has missed his father something fierce. His daddy and his clubhouse. Davy was barely 3 when the two of them built that rickety old shack. But it remains my son's retreat from the world. Without his clubhouse, he's been a lost soul. Lindy has taken to sucking her thumb again. I'm sure the divorce proceedings were responsible for that. And predictably, Dougie started wetting the bed. Children need their father. I'm telling you all this for a reason. I imagine you know what it is. Buck and I are getting back together. I didn't make this decision lightly any more than I made the decision to leave. You and I both know Buck has his faults, but every one of us does. I have his word that he'll never cheat on me again. He begged me to give him one last chance to prove himself. He begged me not to break up our family. For weeks I've been torn, not knowing what to do. My children cry at night after Buck comes to visit, because they miss him so much. They all want to move back home. I used to think I was smart, but solving algebra equations is a whole lot easier than making decisions that affect the lives of my children. Maybe I'm weak. I don't know anymore. I wouldn't take him back if I didn't firmly believe he's learned his lesson. I've made it clear that if he has another affair, it's over, right then and there. Thank you for your support and love during this time. You're the best friend I've ever had, Jillian. I don't know what I would have done without you. Your mom is interviewing other women for the housekeeper position. There's a reason I'm not going to continue with the job. Oh, Jillian, I did something terribly stupid. You don't need to be upset with me because I'm upset enough with myself. Earlier in the month, Buck stopped by the apartment one night. The kids were all asleep and he said he wanted to talk. We did talk. Then he spent the night and, well, you guessed it, I'm pregnant. I haven't told Buck yet, but I already know he'll be absolutely delighted. We're both going to give this reconciliation everything we have. I wouldn't do this if I had a single doubt of his love for the children and me. We're both going to try harder to make our marriage work. I'm grateful to Montgomery Gordon. He was wonderful through all of this. I know he's disappointed, but he'd never openly admit it. He doted on the kids, and they took a shine to him, too. You said he's a stuffed shirt, and I agree, he is a bit stiff before you get to know him. But he's a very nice man. Thank you for being the best friend I've ever had. Love, Leslie. 1974. Jillian's Diary. January 1st, 1974. Dear Nick, here it is, the start of yet another year. I always believed that once I was practicing law, I'd join my father's firm. Instead, I moved back to New York and I'm volunteering with the National Organization for Women. Dad encouraged me to go ahead and do that, knowing how strongly I feel about women's rights. Surprisingly, I get along better with my parents these days, especially my father. I'm not sure who changed and would prefer to think we both have. He remains a staunch Republican despite the Watergate mess, although his defense of Nixon isn't as loud or as adamant since Agnew resigned and the Watergate hearings have started. Montgomery Gordon works closely with Dad, and part of me feared a power struggle would develop between us if I returned to Pine Ridge. I still view him as dodgy, but I've revised my opinion of him. He represented Leslie last year when it looked like she was going to divorce Buck, and she couldn't say enough good things about him. My decision to remain on the East Coast also has to do with the fact that I no longer think of Pine Ridge as home. I associate the town with you and that glorious summer we shared before I left for college. The summer before you went to Vietnam. We were young, innocent, and so much in love. That time, that innocence, is gone forever now. I enjoy visiting Pine Ridge and cherish my friends, especially Leslie. But I don't fit comfortably into that small town anymore. Besides, I love living in New York. Oh, Nick, you wouldn't believe the gas lines. People are waiting 2 hours and longer for gasoline. The newspaper had a picture recently of people parking their cars outside the service station the night before it opened, hoping to get in early before the pumps ran dry. There's even talk of rationing. Supposedly, it all has to do with OPEC, but almost everyone believes it has more to do with greedy oil companies than with any foreign government. I haven't seen Tom since we graduated from law school. He phones every once in a while. We chat for a few minutes, and then I hang up feeling guilty and frustrated. I treated him badly. I know I hurt him. He still holds out hope that one day I'll change my mind about the two of us. But I won't. I've been seeing Curtis Chandler, another attorney. I'm not sleeping with him, although I know he'd enjoy a sexual relationship. I'd enjoy it too, but I learned a valuable lesson with Tom. Contrary to what I'd assumed, there's more to sex than the physical aspect. I only wanted to involve my body and not my heart. While I succeeded, it left me feeling empty. Tom held me, but it wasn't enough. In the end, all I did was hurt someone I considered a friend. The truth is, I'm not as sophisticated as I once believed. I know lots of women who've had multiple sexual partners. We are, after all, part of the free love generation. However, I've decided I can live without sex. I'll never recapture what you and I once had. Frankly, what's the point? Sex complicates everything. Another truth I've recently owned up to. I don't have many friends. Plenty of acquaintances, but few real friends. Leslie is my closest and dearest friend and probably always will be. Our lives have taken diverging paths, but we understand, accept, and love each other like sisters. The only real disagreement we've had since I left for college has to do with the Catholic Church. I no longer consider myself a Catholic. In fact, I don't really consider myself anything. For lack of a better word, I suppose I could say I'm a Christian. But one who carries a deep-seated anger at God for taking you. My attitude toward religion, God, and anything spiritual is bitter. I'd feel like a hypocrite attending Mass. Leslie thinks I'll find peace in church. But I don't want peace. I want you. Leslie and I've talked about my attitude several times. Her situation is vastly different from my own. She finds solace in attending Mass, and it's important to her, but not me. Besides, she has 3 children with a 4th on the way. Yes, a 4th. She insists on using the rhythm method, although I think, despite the church, she's convinced Buck to get a vasectomy after this latest surprise. I went to see your father and Jimmy over the holidays. Your dad's old service station is a plant store now. I went there and talked to the woman who bought the building, and she has plants hanging in every conceivable location. She teaches macrame classes on the side. I know that your father finds it difficult to go past the old station. He's driving a milk truck now, but he didn't talk about his job much. On New Year's Day, we went out to the cemetery together. That's become tradition for us. You'll be pleased to know that Jimmy's working steadily and seems happy. He's serious about a girl from his high school class. I love you, Nick. So much. I refuse to forget you. The war is over now, the POWs have been released, and our troops are home. Saigon has fallen. Regardless of the general sense of relief, a relief I share, I feel cheated and so very alone. Because you didn't come back to me. Remember how much I love you. Jillian. February 28, 1974. Dear Jillian, I'm being lazy this afternoon and just woke up from a nap. Earlier, Dougie and I baked chocolate chip cookies and ate our lunch underneath the kitchen table. That's where his fort was, and we were on the lookout for an Indian attack. Then we snuggled together in my bed, with the blankets pulled over us, hiding from marauding Apaches. It's astonishing what a mother will do to convince her child it's nap time. This pregnancy has been more difficult than all the others combined. I'm tired most of the time and listless. My ankles are swollen and the doctor has taken me completely off salt, which I love. There are only 5 weeks before my due date, and we haven't registered with the hospital yet. It might have something to do with the fact that we haven't paid off the bill for when I had Dougie. I have wonderful news. Buck attended his first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting last month, and now has 30 days sobriety. He talks to his sponsor every day, reads from what he calls the Big Book, not the Bible in case you're wondering, and faithfully attends his meetings. His efforts have convinced me I made the right decision in sticking with him. He's serious about doing whatever he can to save the marriage and keep our family intact. The kids rush to him every night when he gets home, and he's been wonderful with them. Lindy adores her daddy. Judging by the information he brought home from his meetings, I realize my father is an alcoholic too. Buck's been encouraging me to attend Al-Anon meetings for family members of alcoholics, and I will as soon as the baby's born. As it is now, taking care of the house and the kids is all I can manage. Just my luck that of all the men in this world, I had to choose one who has the same problem as my father. I'm positive the reason Dad liked Buck so much is because he saw a drinking buddy in his future son-in-law. Buck never told me what prompted him to seek help, but I thank God he did. I wish my dad would join him, but he refuses to believe he has a problem with alcohol. I see changes in Buck each and every day. He's a better father and husband since our reconciliation. Here's another first. Buck attended Mass with the children and me last Sunday morning. He was surprised to learn that I actually take part. Remember how I used to pick at a guitar in music class when we were teenagers? Well, I've managed to learn a few chords, and I play and sing at the 9 a.m. folk Mass. After church, Buck told me how proud he was of me. But I'm the one who's proud of him. It meant the world to me that he came to Mass with us. I was going to save this as a surprise, but I can't wait. If the baby's a girl, I'm naming her after you. Jill Marie. Buck insists we can't name a child one thing and call him or her another, so Jill it is. I saw your parents at Mass last Sunday, and your mom told me how busy you are. She looked good as always, elegant in her hat and white gloves. Your dad looked wonderful, too. He surprised me. He squatted down so he was eye level with the kids in order to talk to them. He's going to make a wonderful grandfather once you decide to marry and have your own children. I know you find a lot of satisfaction in your work, but don't get so involved that you forget about everything else. Take time for yourself, too. Write when you can. Love, Leslie and all. Pine Ridge Herald, March 12, 1974, obituary column. Patrick Francis Murphy, 56, owner of Murphy's Texaco Full Service Station, died on Monday, March 11, 1974, of a heart attack. His son, James Murphy of Pine Ridge, and one brother, Matthew in Dallas, Texas, survive him. Mr. Murphy is preceded in death by his wife, Eileen, who died of cancer in 1964, and his son, Nicholas Murphy, who was killed in Vietnam in September of 1968. Patrick Murphy was an active member of St. Catherine's Catholic Church and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Burial Mass is scheduled for Thursday at noon. Birth announcement. Christopher James Knowles. Born May 8, 1974. 9 pounds, 3 ounces, 21 inches. Happy parents, Leslie and Buck Knowles. Brother to David, Lindy, and Doug. June 12, 1974. Happy 8th anniversary to my beautiful, wonderful, and forgiving wife. I'm sorry I forgot, but I have a lot on my mind lately. Don't be mad, all right? Buck. June 13th. Buck. The carnations are lovely, but it's too little too late. The least you could have done was let me know you didn't plan on coming home after work. I'm glad you're attending your meetings, but you should have told me. I went to a lot of trouble to make our anniversary dinner special and then sat up for hours waiting for you. I had a horrible night. Leslie. Sweetheart, how many times do I have to tell you I'm sorry? Next time you plan on cooking a fancy dinner, you might let me know. Okay, you've made your point. I've never seen you this angry over something so petty. Let me make it up to you, okay? I'll do anything. Tell Lindy I appreciate her making my lunches for me, but I'd rather you did it. Yesterday she packed me 2 licorice sticks, a plum, and a carrot. I work too hard to survive on that. Come on, baby, be reasonable. Buck. Leslie's Diary. June 26, 1974. It's been ages since I wrote. My last entry was early in 1973, and here it is halfway through 1974. 4 children are demanding, and I have so little time to myself these days. They're occupied for the moment watching Little House on the Prairie. I'm grateful we could finally afford to have the television repaired. I guess I feel the need to write because of my disastrous anniversary. Buck claims he forgot all about it, but I'm never completely sure if he's telling the truth. It's difficult to admit that even to myself. With all the lies he's told me over the years, I'd be a fool to believe his lame excuses the way I did when we were first married. Time has taught me to question everything he says. When Jillian and I were teenagers, we sometimes stayed up all night reading books aloud to each other. In the wee hours of the morning, when we were so tired it was hard to keep our eyes open, we talk about what our lives would be like 10 or 20 years into the future. The scenes we created in our minds have nothing in common with what has come to be. We both saw ourselves married with children, as well as maintaining our own careers. I was a nurse with 2 perfect children and a husband who adored me. Jillian is the attorney she used to say she'd be. She learned a lot when she volunteered at NOW, and has taken her experience to a New York law firm that's prestigious enough to do her father proud. She's a polished professional, shining like a gemstone, a brilliant attorney, sharp, quick, relentless. She's told me about a few of her cases, and I almost feel sorry for the defendants. On rare occasions as a teenager, I saw that ruthless, angry side of Jillian. These days, that part of her is all the world sees. But beneath her hard-edged determination, she remains the friend I remember from my childhood. My best friend in the whole world. Losing Nick changed her. It's almost as if she's shut herself off from love. Yet when she's with the children and me, the old Jillian quickly resurfaces and she's once again the girl she used to be. How I wish she'd marry and have children of her own. In my heart, I know that's what Nick would want for her, too. I've tried to talk to her about it, but she closes up so tight there's no reaching her. My own dreams of attending college vanished when I learned I was pregnant with Davy. I love my children, and I wouldn't change anything. My life with Buck is the hand fate dealt me, and I'm determined to make the best of it. That, however, doesn't make me blind to my husband's faults. He can be wonderful one day, and the next he'll treat me with thoughtless cruelty. Our anniversary is a prime example of that. Although Buck claims he's attending AA meetings most evenings, I'm pretty sure he's elsewhere, at least some of the time. But I refuse to be the kind of wife who follows her husband around, trying to catch him in a lie. And yet I won't bury my head in the sand again, either. Finding the balance isn't easy. I suspect one of the reasons I'm writing all this down has to do with something I saw on television. Or rather, someone. The other night, Buck was gone as usual, and I was hurrying to get dinner on the table when a news bulletin flashed across the screen. It had to do with Patty Hearst and the Symbionese Liberation Army. I nearly dropped the pan of tuna casserole. Not at the news flash about Patty Hearst, but at the man reporting it. Cole Greenberg. He was the naval officer I met on the beach in Hawaii back in 1967. I've never forgotten him. And although it's probably wrong of me, I've always regretted not giving him my address. In all likelihood, he won't even remember me. 3 hours out of a lifetime was all we shared. When Cole's face came on the screen, I could hardly stop myself from telling the children that I knew him and he was my friend. I didn't, of course, and it's not really true. But it could have been. And I wish it was. I wonder if he's married and if he's happy. For my own peace of mind, I pray he is. I remember I marveled at how smart he was and how much we had in common. He was so easy to talk to. And he said the same thing about me. He was at the top of his class, the one everyone called a brain. He told me he'd never dated much, and I could see he was telling the truth. He said that one day he wanted to report the news on television, and now it's happening. I was so excited to see him, so pleased that the things he'd talked about have come to pass. The only real boyfriend I ever had was Buck, and I married him. I so want Cole Greenberg to be happy and married and successful, which he appears to be. I feel a bit silly writing this, but the last 2 nights I've dreamed of Cole. The dreams have been wonderful. We're on the beach again, talking about the war in Vietnam and the books we've read. It's as though I was single and the two of us were falling in love. This must stop. It has to. I can't allow myself to indulge in this kind of escape. It's too dangerous to my mental health and to my marriage. My reality is that I'm married to Buck, and we have 4 beautiful children. August 10th, 1974. Dear Jillian, this letter is long overdue, but I want you to know how much I appreciated you flying home for my dad's funeral. It would have been a lot rougher on me if you hadn't been there. Thank you for helping me with everything, like choosing the coffin and arranging the wake. I didn't expect Dad to die this young, but he was never the same after we learned about Nick. None of us were. Losing the service station was another blow. He hated his job driving a milk truck. He said it paid the bills, but it was as though there wasn't any joy left in him anymore. The doctors said his heart attack was brought on by years of cigarette smoking, and I'm sure that had something to do with it. But you and I both know the real cause. Vietnam. It killed my father the same way it took my brother. Nick's been dead nearly 6 years now, and I still miss him. Sometimes I think about telling him something, and it hits me that I can't. My brother is dead. And then I feel a shock and this sadness that sucker punches me. I can tell it's going to be like that with my dad, too. I'm really going to miss him. I gotta tell you, it's a weird feeling being an orphan. First my mom, but I barely remember her. Then Nick, and now Dad. If it hadn't been for you and Angie, I would have stood alone in the family pew at the funeral mass. You're like a sister to me, Jillian, and I want you to know how grateful I am for everything you've done for me over the years. Both you and your parents have been like family to me. I think your father's done a lot of things in the last 6 years to help my dad and me. He's never admitted anything, but I'm sure of it. And I believe it's his way of letting us know that if he had to do it over again, he wouldn't have been so critical of Nick. Deep down, I've always had that feeling. We ran into each other recently, and he made a point of saying hello. I appreciated that. I appreciate you, too. There's something else you should know. I was going through a bunch of Dad's business papers and came across 2 loans he'd taken out when the energy crunch first hit. Your father co-signed on those loans. It looks like Dad paid off all his financial obligations when he sold the service station to the plant lady. If he didn't, I'll make sure everything is square with the bank and your dad. I know you've had your differences with your father, but Judge Lawton is a good guy. It was because of him that I got my first job with D&D Construction. I asked Judge Lawton about it once, but he denied he had anything to do with me being hired. I know better, though. I'm glad you are finally able to meet Angie. She felt bad about being away over the holidays, because I talk about you so much. She sure is pretty, isn't she? We started dating last summer, and I'm pretty sure we're going to get married. What do you think? You liked her, didn't you? She graduated from college this summer and wants to be a teacher. Angie and I have been talking about a lot of things. She's encouraging me to give community college a try. Since Mr. D made me a foreman, I've discovered how much I enjoy working with blueprints. Someday I might think about all of that. Kind of an exciting idea, isn't it? Thanks again, Jillian, for everything. Your adopted brother, Jim Murphy. P.S. Isn't it something about Nixon resigning as president? When they got rid of Agnew, Dad told me Nixon was next, and he was right. Who will it be now? The Pope? Jillian Lawton. September 18th, 1974. Dear Mom and Dad, thank you for the radar range, which I'm using and enjoying. I don't know how I lived this long without one. If only I could find a way to make popcorn in it, I'd really be in heaven. But the gift isn't the only reason I'm writing to thank you. I recently realized how much I have to be grateful for. Loving parents, good friends, an exciting new job, and much, much more. Dad, I want to thank you for your patience with me, especially in the late 60s. It's taken me 4 years, but I want to apologize for the letter I wrote you after the shootings at Kent State. You received the brunt of my pain and anger, and I thank you for loving me through those turbulent years. Mom always claimed you and I have the same personality, and that's the reason we sometimes clash. It's taken me this long to recognize how right she is. Where those words once made me cringe, now they make me so very proud. It's an honor to have my name mentioned in connection with you. I want to be a good attorney, the same way you were. You've been a wonderful role model for me, and I'm proud to be your daughter. Much love, Jillian. P.S. By the way, I'd love it if you and Mom could fly east next month. There's a revival of Gypsy starring Angela Lansbury on Broadway. Let me know as soon as you can, and I'll order tickets. Jillian Lawton, October 20th, 1974. Dearest Leslie, it's a lovely Sunday afternoon, and I'm indulging myself by being completely and utterly lazy. Mom and Dad were in New York last week, and it was great to see them. I spent as much time with them as my schedule would allow. My law firm is one of the largest in the city, and the long hours are unbelievable. But that's how it goes, and I have to pull my share. I'm making incredible money. Now all I need is time to spend it. Everything went exceptionally well with my parents until Mom mentioned Nick. She thinks I've buried myself in work because I'm still dealing with my grief. This was her subtle way of letting me know she'd like me to get married, I guess. Frankly, I don't have time for a man in my life, which I suppose is Mom's point. Nevertheless, I've given our conversation some thought. The problem is, I haven't met a man who makes me feel the way Nick did. I don't know if it's even possible to find that level of love and communication with anyone else. I'm over the tears, and the grief is no longer so brutal. Sometimes I'll remember something Nick said or did, and I catch myself smiling. I told my mother I haven't ruled out marriage, which I know pleased her. I'm not sure, though. The thing is, I just can't imagine loving anyone with the same intensity I loved Nick, and still do. Thanks for the pictures of the children. Christopher's so cute, I just might forgive him for not being a girl. I did a double take when I saw the one of Lindy. Leslie, she looks so much like you. It's hard to believe she's almost 7. Davy's quite the little gentleman, isn't he? He looks so grown up in his suit and tie. Little Doug stole my heart, holding onto his blankie with one hand and sucking his thumb with the other. I suppose it's only natural that he wanted his blankie back after Christopher was born. Buck never followed through with that vasectomy, did he? I applaud your decision to handle the matter of birth control yourself. No, I'm not attending Mass. I haven't in years, and you know that. I realize you feel I should make peace with the church. The problem is, I don't think I can. I no longer think of myself as Catholic. For a while I was bitter because of Nick, but I'm not anymore. After working with Now, my views of male-dominated religion have simply made it impossible for me to join any church, Catholic or otherwise. We've had this discussion before, and I think it'd be best if we avoided the subject. I know you're committed to the church, and I respect that. Unfortunately, it just isn't the same for me. I might be able to fly home for Christmas. No promises, but I'm working on it. New York is an incredible city, especially in December. So if my schedule won't permit me to travel, you don't need to worry about me being here alone. I won't have a problem spending the holidays by myself. The fact is, I've come to quite enjoy my own company. My parents seem to have a hard time believing it, but for the most part, I'm actually happy. For 6 years, I'd lost that joy, but slowly, surely, it's returning. Life does go on, although it can take a long while to realize it. Enough about me. I noticed that you didn't mention one word about Buck. What's going on? You should know by now that there isn't anything you can't tell me. Write soon. I love getting your letters and hearing about the children. And no, you can't tell me not to spoil them at Christmas. I have way too much fun shopping for them. I think I'll see a movie tonight, even if I have to go by myself. I can't remember the last one I saw, and I've been hearing good things about Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. I'll let you know what I think. Kiss the kids for me. Love, Jillian.
Montgomery Gordon, Esquire. 248 Phillips Avenue, Pine Ridge, Washington, 98005. November 12, 1974. Dear Jillian, it only took 10 years to convince you to have dinner with me. I want you to know I consider our night on the town worth every minute of that wait. To say I was surprised when you agreed to dine with me on my recent trip east would be an understatement. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed your company. Sincerely, Montgomery. DWI for Buck Knowles. The undersigned certifies and says that in the state of Washington, driver's license number, Knowles, star DA461TB, state, Washington, expires 575. ID number 533246009. Name, last, Knowles. First, David. Initial, J. Address, Knotty Pines Trailer Court, City, Pine Ridge, State, Washington. Zip code 98005. Employer, Pine Ridge Lumber Mill. Race, W. Sex, M. Date of birth, 02-28-43. Height, 6.1. Weight, 200. Eyes, blue. Hair, brown. Residential phone, 206-458-0522. Violation date, month 12, day 24, year 74. Time, 10:30 p.m. At location, State Street. City, County of, Pine Ridge. Did operate the following vehicle, motor vehicle, on a public highway and vehicle license number, 478GZR, State, Washington. Expires, 0675. Vehicle year, 1960. Make, Chevy. Model, Impala. Style, two-door. Color, blue. Did then and there commit the following offenses. Operate a motor vehicle while intoxicated. Appearance date, month, 01. Day, 07. Year, 75. Time, 9:30 a.m. Date issued, 12/24/74. Without admitting having committed each of the above offenses, I promise to respond as directed on this notice. Defendant. I certify under penalty of perjury under the laws of the State of Washington that I have issued this on the date and at the location above,
that I have probable cause to believe the above-named person committed the above offenses, and my report written on the back of this document is true and correct. Officer. 1976. Jillian's Diary. January 1st, 1976. Dear Nick, can you believe it's been nearly 10 years since we graduated from high school? Leslie is already dutifully at work, rounding up everyone for an August reunion. She's always so organized. Where she finds the time and energy to be a wife, a mother, and to do everything else she does is beyond me. I might be a corporate attorney, but she's turned into an earth mother who runs circles around me. Ever since the energy crunch back in 1974, she refuses to be at the mercy of anyone for her family's basic needs. She has a garden that's the envy of anyone who sees it. She raises a few chickens and sells the eggs she doesn't use. Most recently, she started baking her own bread and is active in a huge co-op. Reading Diet for a Small Planet by Frances Moore LePay had a powerful influence on her. In addition, she sews many of the kids' clothes, knits and crochets, and puts up preserves. Like I said earlier, I'm exhausted just listing all the things she does. Buck's a complete waste of time, but you and I knew that years ago. In my opinion, she should have divorced him when she had the chance. He works 4 or 5 months in a row and then is either laid off or comes down with a mysterious ailment that forces him to take several weeks off. His affliction coincidentally appears around the same time as hunting season, and he goes off with his worthless friends and stumbles around in the bush. He's back on the booze, too, with intermittent periods of sobriety. Why Leslie puts up with him, I'll never know. I don't agree with her choice, but my admiration for her grows whenever we're together. She's coping with a difficult situation and doing a wonderful job raising those kids. I keep pictures of David, Lindy, Doug, and Christopher on my desk at work, and I love them as if they were my own. What beautiful, sweet children they are. While I was home over the holidays, I went to see Jimmy. Oops, Jim. Oh, Nick, you'd be so proud of him. He's married and attending night classes in business management. I spent a day with him and Angie and was impressed with what a nice couple they make. It's become tradition for the two of us to visit the cemetery. We placed flowers on your dad's gravesite. The marble grave marker, with both your parents' names engraved on it, is in place now. Jim insisted he pay for that himself, although I was more than willing to help with the expense. He left me to spend some time alone with you, knowing I'd want a few moments before he joined me. You don't need to worry about your little brother, Nick. He's responsible and wise beyond his years. I suspect you're wondering why I'm chatting on endlessly about Leslie and Jim instead of telling you about myself the way I normally do the first of every year. Nick, something's happened to me that I thought would never happen again. I've fallen in love. So deeply in love it shocks me. I didn't think it was possible after losing you. You'll probably get a good laugh when I tell you who it is. Montgomery Gordon. I'm the only person in the world who calls him Monty. You can't tell me anything I haven't already told myself. I'm fully aware that he's too old for me. I'm still in my 20s and he's 44. Not only that, we live on opposite sides of the country. Now here's the part you'll find really amusing. He's a Republican and as chauvinistic as my own father. Well, almost. He's learning. It all started in the autumn of 74 when he flew to New York for a business meeting and we had dinner together. As you know, Monty's been a good friend of my parents over the years. You'll remember how Mom and Dad attempted to pair us off soon after you died and even before. I resented their interference and refused to date him. In fact, I was downright rude to him. Then back in 74, in a moment of weakness, I agreed to meet him for dinner while he was in town. It was a surprise to discover I actually enjoyed his company. When he returned to Pine Ridge, he wrote me the sweetest letter. I wrote him back and, well, that was the beginning. Last year on Valentine's, he came out here expressly to spend the day with me. We talked until the wee hours. That night, after walking through the snow in Central Park, he kissed me. I didn't feel completely shaken the way I did the first time you and I kissed, but it was a nice kiss. After Valentine's Day, Monty and I spent a fortune talking on the phone. I wish to hell someone would take on the telephone company's monopoly. Long-distance rates are ridiculous, even after business hours. Now it's become habit to check in with each other at the end of the day. Our conversations sometimes last 2 and 3 hours. It's crazy, I know. With our hectic schedules, it's impossible for us to get together very often. We're both involved in cases that demand time and dedication. The earliest I can take a few days off to actually see him is June. I never expected to fall in love again, Nick. But I've discovered something. I don't love you any less. Perhaps more. Because it's given me a glimpse of the adult relationship you and I might have shared. It's as if loving you has enabled me to open my heart to Monty. Just last week when I was home for Christmas, Monty mentioned marriage for the first time. I've thought about marriage too. It seems a natural progression for this relationship. And yet I froze up the moment he uttered the word. Marriage frightens me. I love you, Nick. My love didn't die when your casket was lowered into the ground. It's been 8 years now, and you're as much a part of me as you ever were. But I love Monty, too. It's taken me all these years to reach this point, this ability to love another man. I'm not sure I'm ready for marriage and all the changes it would bring to my life. I said I need time to think about all this, but I could see Monty was a little impatient. I'm afraid I'm going to lose him. Oh, Nick, what should I do? I love living on the East Coast, and I don't want to abandon my career. I've worked too hard and too long to walk away from it. Monty prefers life on the West Coast. I don't know what to do. Then I look at the pictures of Leslie's babies, and I feel this deep hunger. I yearn for children of my own. I don't want to be alone anymore. This doesn't mean I'll stop loving you. But, Nick, if it's at all possible, find a way to let me know you approve of Monty. I need that. Remember how much I love you. Jillian. February 4th, 1976. Dear Susan, I've just got Christopher down for his nap, so I'm taking a few minutes to write and tell you how pleased I am about your pregnancy. I'll bet Aaron and Jessica are excited about being a big brother and big sister. I certainly understand how you feel about 3 children being your limit. Mom and Dad don't know, but I had a tubal ligation when Christopher was born. Father Morris would strongly disapprove if he learned what I'd done. But Father Morris and the Catholic Church aren't raising these children. Buck and I are the ones responsible for the size of our family. You can see that my views have changed somewhat. I figure God gave us a brain and a budget, and we have to work with both. There's a reason I mentioned God. Recently, a woman in the trailer park invited me to a Bible study in her home. The only reason I attended was so I could make friends with the other mothers. The socializing is good for me. But I soon discovered how much I enjoy reading the Bible. When Father Morris found out I was meeting with Protestants, he paid me a visit, his first in several years, and assured me the church would teach me everything I needed to know about God. He said it's better to have a priest explain the scriptures to laymen. He went on to say I was treading dangerous waters by attending a Bible study, especially one conducted by someone other than a Catholic priest. His attitude rankled. It seemed as if he was saying I wasn't intelligent enough to make these decisions on my own or to understand what's written in the Bible. After his visit, I realized how much I've accepted in my life simply because a man insisted that was the way things should be. Then I got angry. Angry with Father Morris, angry with Buck, and with Dad and almost every man who's ever been in my life. Jillian's worked hard to enlighten me on the issue of women's rights, and for the first time it started to sink in. I stood up to Father Morris and informed him that I had no intention of leaving the Bible study. Wouldn't you know it, he went straight to Mom and Dad. as if I were a disobedient child. The very next day, our own mother phoned and cautioned me against this group. I couldn't believe my ears. I'm enjoying these sessions, and the other women are becoming my friends. I certainly don't need Father Morris telling me who can be my friend. I do a slow burn every time I think about what he said and did. Now I'm going to say something else that will shock you. I've stopped going to Mass. There's a small non-denominational church down the road that I've been going to for the past couple of weeks. Buck doesn't care one way or the other. I haven't told Mom or Dad yet. I'm sure you'll hear about it, but I figure I'm 27 years old and this is my business. Speaking of Mom and Dad, they're well. Dad's eager to attend the Legionnaires' Convention this summer, which will take place in Philadelphia in July. My 10-year class reunion happens the first week in August. Oh, Susan, tell me, where did all those years go? It seems only a short while ago that we were fighting over whose turn it was to use the bathroom mirror. Remember those huge, spongy pink rollers we faithfully wore to bed? I'm glad we keep in touch. I hardly ever hear from Mike since he moved to Nevada. The last time he wrote, he was dealing blackjack in Vegas. Mom hasn't heard from him at all, and I don't think she will as long as Dad is alive. Dad's never forgiven Mike for helping me when I left Buck. Ever since then, the two of them can't be in the same room without yelling and arguing. You asked about Joe, and he's fine. I like his new girlfriend. I hope Karen encourages him to get a job other than the one he has at the mill. That's a dead end. And he's too smart to waste his life there the way Dad and Buck have. Lily's great. It's hard to believe our baby sister will be 21 this year, isn't it? She's still working as a beautician, which is a real bonus to me. According to Mom, Bruce has turned into a real heartthrob. He worked for a contractor this summer and earned enough money to buy his own car. Can you imagine either of us driving our own car at 16? Buck is drinking again, and is fool enough to think I don't know. We don't have much of a marriage, although we both do a good job of pretending otherwise. I suppose he's the reason I need that Bible study as badly as I do. I want so much to be a good wife and mother. The kids are awake, so I'll have to end this for now. You're my sister, and I love you. If you need anything for the new baby, be sure and let me know. Love, Leslie and all. Montgomery Gordon, Esquire, 248 Phillips Avenue, Pine Ridge, Washington, 98005, March 19, 1976. My dearest Jillian, I know you're away for the weekend. Not talking to you doesn't seem right, especially on a Friday evening when we've so often chatted. But perhaps it's for the best. I'll write everything down so you can read this over carefully and think about what I have to say. All those years ago when we first met, I knew I was going to love you. I realize it makes you uncomfortable when I tell you this, but I can't deny what I know to be true. After all this time, it seems like a miracle that you feel the same way about me. If you remember last Christmas, I mentioned marriage in hopes of gauging your reception to the idea. You immediately tensed up, as though you were afraid I'd press the subject. Your reaction told me everything I feared. You listed all the reasons talk of marriage was premature. You live on the East Coast, while I live on the West. Your job, your friends, my friends. Within 5 minutes, you had me believing a marriage between us would be impractical and improbable. It made me see what a persuasive attorney you are. In the months since, I've had time to think about your objections. True enough, there are several considerations that require discussion. But nothing so major it can't be resolved. It occurred to me recently that we can find a solution to any one of these issues. The real reason is Nick Murphy, isn't it? I know you loved him, Jillian, and that you love him still. I can't compete with a dead man. I won't try. But I can assure you that I don't intend to replace Nick. He's part of you. His love for you and yours for him shaped you into the woman you are, the woman I love. I don't love you the same way as Nick did. What you had with him is unique. but I can and will love you as me. And the love we share, while completely separate, will be unique in its own way. If you do agree to marry me, I want you to know I don't expect you to stop loving Nick. That said, I also want you to know I put out a few feelers on the East Coast to see what kind of response I'd get on the job market. To my delight, I've been offered an excellent position with the Justice Department. If I could be certain you'd accept my proposal, I'd leap at the offer. I love you, Jillian, and want nothing more than to be married to you. But I can't, I won't uproot my entire life unless you're sure this is what you want, too. Think about it. Consider it seriously. The problem is, I need an answer soon. Will you marry me, Jillian? Tell me. Yes? No? Love, Montgomery. Jillian Lawton, March 21st, 1976. My dearest Monty, forgive me for being such a coward and writing instead of telling you personally or over the phone. Your letter arrived this afternoon. I knew it was coming and had guessed at its contents. Nevertheless, I was stunned. You want an answer right away. I understand, and you deserve one. But I can't make a decision like this under pressure. Before I write any more, it's important that you know how deeply I've come to love you. I love you so much, and yet, I'm afraid. I have never completely understood what frightens me about marrying you, but the fear is there. I suspect you know what's coming. I'm grateful you had the courage to bring up Nick. Few people do. Your tenderness toward my feelings for him touched my heart, and has helped me sort through my feelings about you and me. In my own defense, I never expected to fall in love again. I certainly didn't anticipate this. Perhaps such thinking was short-sighted. If I were to see a counselor, I'm sure he or she would advise me to let go of the past and get on with my life. Unfortunately, I seem incapable of that. Especially if it means letting go of Nick. I'm so grateful you understand and accept my love for him. Heaven knows my parents will make a fuss. But what I'd like to suggest is this. Accept the job with the Justice Department and move in with me. Let's give this marriage idea a trial run first. I'm sorry, but that's the best I can do for now. Love, Jillian. Western Union, Telegram. To Jillian Lawton. From Montgomery Gordon. I'm too old to play house. The question remains the same. Yes or no? Montgomery. Pine Ridge Herald, May 29, 1976, Neighbors Section. Jillian Lawton marries prominent local attorney. Judge and Mrs. Leonard Lawton are pleased to announce the marriage of their daughter, Jillian Lynn Lawton, to Montgomery Gordon. The bride is a 1966 graduate of Holy Name Academy in Pine Ridge, a 1970 graduate of Barnard College, and has a Harvard Law degree. She is currently residing in New York City. She is an associate at Klein & Shoemaker, attorneys at law. The groom has recently accepted a position with the United States Justice Department. The couple will make their home in New York City. Leslie Knowles, a lifelong friend of the bride, served as matron of honor, and Charles Johnson, the groom's cousin, served as best man. The bride's gown featured French lace and beaded pearls over satin. A reception was held immediately following the ceremony at Pine Ridge Country Club. Jillian Lawton Gordon, June 19, 1976. Dearest Leslie, I'm taking a moment to jot you a long overdue note. Monty and I are settling into married life. I love my husband, but even now I'm not sure I did the right thing. I agreed to go through with the wedding because I didn't want to lose him. I've never had anyone love me like this, not even Nick. Monty is completely and totally dedicated to me. I'm telling you all this as a preface to describing our first fight. I had my hair cut, and it never occurred to me that I should mention my plans to Monty. It's trimmed like Dorothy Hamill's, and I love its short, easy-to-care-for style. Monty was so upset he barely said a word to me all night. I'm not accustomed to having a man tell me how to wear my hair. I let that be known in terms he was sure to understand. He got huffy and I got huffy right back. I learned one thing. I hate the silent treatment. We patched it up fast enough, and I lured him to bed to prove all was forgiven. We so seldom bicker, and this has taught us both some valuable lessons. Speaking of bed, we're hoping I'll get pregnant soon. With Monty turning 45 this year, we don't want to wait much longer. You, my dear and fertile friend, never seemed to have a problem with that. Any hints you care to pass on? I'll let you know at reunion time how successful we are. Monty and I will be staying in the city for the bicentennial celebration. Already there's talk about security around the United Nations building against possible terrorist attack. We don't have any definite plans for the rest of the summer, other than going to Pine Ridge in early August. So Buck bought himself a CB radio. Yes, I can picture it. What's his handle? I'll bet Davy and Dougie love riding around in his pickup chatting with the big truckers on the interstate. You haven't said much about Buck lately, which leads me to think he's up to something unpleasant. My mom and dad are enjoying their retirement to the fullest. Monty and I are picking them up at the airport tomorrow. They've spent the last 2 weeks in Italy. Speaking of traveling, your father will love Philadelphia. It's a fabulous city. I'm sorry your mother won't be attending the Legionnaires' Convention with him, but from what I understand, men rarely bring their wives to these things. I can hardly wait for our class reunion, but I'm far more interested in spending time with you. Promise me you'll write soon. Love, Jillian. Holy Name Academy and Marquette High School announce the 10-year reunion of the class of 1966. August 6-8, 1976. Pine Ridge, Washington. Friday night get-together, Saturday dinner and dance, Sunday picnic. RSVP Leslie Adamski Knowles. In memory of Michael John Adamski. March 10, 1925 to July 6, 1976. Services, Emerson Mortuary. Organist, Sally Johnson. Casket bearers, Michael Adamski Jr., Joseph Adamski, Bruce Adamski, Clarence Behrens, David Buck Knowles, Roy Benson. Interment, Pine Ridge Cemetery, Pine Ridge, Washington. Leslie's Diary, August 9, 1976. We are all reeling from the sudden and unexpected death of my father. Off he went with his beer-drinking buddies to Philadelphia for the American Legion Convention. Mom drove him to the airport and kissed him goodbye, never dreaming that the next time she saw him would be in a casket. Dad was one of the first to come down with the mysterious ailment and one of the first to die. He was gone even before Mom could make arrangements to fly east. The shock of it rippled through our community. Bud Jones, Dad's roommate at the convention, got sick too, but he survived. No one's sure what happened to cause this. It's still being investigated. All I know is that my father is dead and my mother is grieving. I have a lot of mixed feelings about my father. Sometimes I thought I hated him. He was never the kind of father I needed, and we disagreed on many things. But I did love him. Not until he died did I realize how much. He may not have been the greatest dad, but he was my dad. I'm grateful I had the reunion work to keep me busy. As long as I was involved with those arrangements, I didn't need to deal with my feelings about him. Now that the 10-year high school reunion has come and gone, I can say that all the committee's hard work paid off. It was wonderful to see everyone again. The girls looked basically the same. It was the boys who were different. Most had filled out and looked more mature, more muscular. After literally weeks of work, I came down with a terrible case of nerves. Not everyone knew I was pregnant when we graduated, and now Buck and I have 4 children. Not surprisingly, I received the award for the one with the most kids. Although it was less than 3 weeks since we buried my dad, Mom insisted I have a new dress. All at once I felt like prom night all over again. I modeled the dress for Buck and he growled and chased me around the house. The kids loved it and laughed with delight as they watched their father sweep me off my feet. The night of the dinner and dance, it was an entirely different story. Buck knew I was supposed to be at the hall early to help set up, but he was late and then had to shower. All in all, we arrived 30 minutes late, and the entire evening started on